Welcome. This is Ken Holmes with Your Cash is Flowing.
I'm Chad Barr, president of the Chad Barr Group, whose main focus is to help successful entrepreneurs and businesses leverage the power of the web to transform their business success. And I'm delighted to be here today with Ken Homza, who is the president of Homza Consulting. Ken is something of a maverick in the traditional field. He's decisive and takes a no-fear approach and loves dealing with complex challenges. His style is somewhat of, straightforward, thought-provoking, and actually a little hard-hitting at times. But what he's known for is his remarkable results and transformational improvements that he helps his clients achieve. He brings over 20 years' experience across finance, marketing, and strategic roles to his clients, as well as fractional CFO services. His experience spans positions with large billion-dollar corporations, mid-range companies, and startup ventures in technology, manufacturing, distribution, advertising, financial services, retail, and service delivery organizations. If you actually check out his world-class website, homza.com, which is loaded with insight on how to dramatically improve your business, you will also find an impressive list of client testimonials, case studies, and actual clients he has worked with. He also has an MBA from Carnegie Mellon, Tepper School of Business. With all that in mind, welcome, Ken.
Chad, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that wonderful introduction.
Ken, you know, I've worked with you for quite some time, and you are known, from my perspective, and I believe from your client's perspective, as a strategic thinker with a lot of great tactical and practical advice. So let me just, I have several questions I want to ask you today. The first one, when it comes to our finance, I know you believe in a wealth mindset. So first of all, identify what is a wealth mindset and how does an entrepreneur and organization start to develop the thinking around building a wealth mindset?
Chad, I think it all starts with profitability. And too many entrepreneurs think about growth without thinking about profits first. And what I try to do with my clients is to get them to focus on both growing their business, but growing it profitably. Too many times, businesses feel like they're on a treadmill and they're making progress in growing their business, but the profits seem to be elusive. And that's a real problem. Getting business owners to focus on profits is of critical importance in teaching them how to control their expenses and balance growth and profitability is one of the things that I focus on with many, many of my clients.
So let's dive deeper into this. Many entrepreneurs, self-included here, are always concerned or maybe overly occupied with growing the top lines. And you're not talking about profits. Is growing the top line the answer to all my problems, or do I need to just focus on profits or a combination of both?
Well, you need to really focus on a combination of both, and it's about balance. I'm working with a client right now where they've grown their business over $1.2 million of revenue per month, but the profits still haven't really come through. And 2015 is going to be their breakout year. They're going to change it from just eking out a few dollars at the bottom line to really starting to put the profits down to the bottom line. What they've done so far has really been about building the foundation. But at some point, you have to turn from building that foundation of the business and getting all of your structure in place to really driving out profits. Now, when that level is, in terms of revenue dollars, is different for every business. A mom and pop or a small consultant might focus on getting profits out almost from day one, where someone who has a longer, bigger vision might be willing to sustain some years of losses or break even profitability in order to really go for a bigger long-term opportunity.
That's great, Ken. You know, you actually became an author and published a book, which I happen to have in my bookshelf. The book is Your Cash is Flowing. And we should talk a lot in the book about a lot of financial critical concepts regarding finances and beyond, actually. So a couple of questions that I have surrounding the book itself. First of all, why does one, whether it's an organization or entrepreneur, why do we need to think like a CFO? What's the benefit there? Why is that important to us?
Well, Chad, the CFO role is really one that I think binds the organization together. The CFO can often play just a critical role in understanding how marketing, product, operations all come together. And what they really do is tell the story of the business through the numbers. And I spend most of my time not looking at the past, which is what traditional accountants and CPAs tend to do, but I spend almost all of my time looking at the future. The past is interesting, but the past is really only interesting to the extent it tells you something about the future. As we record this, we just finished October results for many of my clients. The interesting part about that is, what does that mean for November and December, the fourth quarter, the rest of the year, and on into the next year? That's really where it becomes critical.
So another question that comes to mind when it comes to your book, you also said that what you don't know can hurt your bottom line. So how do we develop the mindset of what we don't know?
Well, entrepreneurs need to bring a sense of curiosity to their financial statements. And they need to ask questions every month. And they'll find that over time, their questions get deeper and they learn more and more about their business. Even people who've been operating in the same business for years find that then when they really engage with their financial statements, they learn a lot more about their business. One of the things I do for all of my clients is, and to some extent, it's something they could do without me, but they just never have, is force the management team to sit down and spend an hour, sometimes two, in a room focusing on the financial results of the business and talking to each other about where they think the business is going.
I love your chapter that is labeled Driving for Results, because I'm a firm believer in outcomes and results. And in the chapter, you have the sub-chapter that talks about setting the agendas, who to push, pushbacks, accountability, deadlines. Say more about the need and how critical it is for organization to really focus on results.
Profits aren't something that just happen to pop out at the bottom of the income statement. Profits need to be planned for. And if you, every month, plan to drop a certain amount down to the bottom line, whether it's $1,000 or $100,000 or $1,000,000, depending upon the size of your organization, you can control what's happening. And you will find that if you build that habit, you will start to build a capital base for your business that puts you in a much, much stronger position. One of the problems many small businesses have is they just don't have a strong enough capital base. So when they go to deal with their bank or lenders, they're dealing from a position of weakness as opposed to a position of strength. I want businesses to be in a position where every bank wants to do business with them so that the businesses have a choice. They're not out there shopping and taking any deal that they can get.
That's great. I've learned early in my career when I first started the company that cash flow is probably the thing that oftentimes keeps me awake at night and probably is a concern of most of my colleagues or other entrepreneurs out there. Say some more, first of all, about the need to really focus on cash flow and what are some tips or insight you have on how do we improve our cash flow position?
I think every business needs to focus on cash flow, but I think it's even more important to think about where cash flow comes from. And cash flow comes from profitability. Now, years ago, I used to train in karate, and there was a saying, what's more important, speed or power? And the answer was speed, because power comes from speed. And in business, cash flow only comes from profits. Too many times, businesses are so focused on just the cash, they're really not getting cash from profitability. They're just juggling. They're pulling in a receivable. They're stretching out a payable. But what they really need to focus on are the profits that generate cash. Every business needs to look at the three financial statements. And that's the income statement, the balance sheet, and the statement of cash flows. And those three connect to each other. In fact, there's a visual on my website that explains just that. And if businesses do that, then they'll start to develop good cash flow habits and good profitability habits. For most of my clients, I don't spend very much time thinking about cash because they're profitable. If I know the cash balance of a client, that's usually a bad sign.
So is cash flow one of the biggest challenges you feel organizations, individuals face? And if so, also, I'm curious, what have you seen to be the biggest challenges facing entrepreneurs and organizations?
I think the biggest challenge is that entrepreneurs are somewhat intimidated by the financial reporting process and by their financial statements. And therefore, they don't understand how their actions day to day impact the financial statements. And if they really understood that, they would then be acting differently when they come into the office. Years ago, I worked with a client, and he always said, the financial statements are just something that the accountants do. I wanted to grab him and shake him and say, that's not something the accountants do. That is a reflection of what you do every day when you walk in the door. And they really are. One of the chapters in my book is that financial statements are like a mirror, and they are just that. They reflect what you do. And just as when every one of us wakes up every day and looks in the mirror and sees that reflection, that's a reflection of our lifestyle, how we eat, how we work out, how we exercise, or how we don't. And financial statements are just the same. So to the extent that business owners can really engage with them and understand how their actions every day impact the bottom line and therefore impact cash flow, that's crucial.
That's great. I love the analogy you just used there. I know you also, both in your book and you talk often on your website about the concept of the need to share financial information within the company and also create and share goals. So I need to understand from your perspective, isn't that just something for management to look into? Why is it important for people to share their financial information within the company?
There's a wide range in terms of how much information companies share about financial statements and goals. Some, and I talked to an entrepreneur just yesterday morning, are completely open book, where others are a little bit less so. I don't really have a strong view, and I think it depends a lot upon the company culture and the kinds of people you have. And frankly, if you're going to be very open book, you really have to spend a lot of time educating people about the financial statements. But the reason it's important to share goals is so that everyone knows where the organization is driving and can help in achieving those goals. If everyone knows the corporate priorities, they can work to figure out what their part is in those, and management can help them determine their part in it. I had a client several years back that really set an aggressive revenue goal, and they tracked it and showed everyone in the company how we were doing month to month, and they put big goals out there, but they put rewards and incentives out there that went along with them. In other words, if they made it, everyone in the company was going to get a bonus. Well, it really got the organization working together. And so you saw administrative people and staff people trying to take on more duties and get it away from the people who were revenue producing so that they could take one more client meeting. It had a tremendous impact on the company over the course of a year.
That's fabulous. I like the idea of creating the incentive in such a way that mobilized the entire organization to both be enthusiastic about it, but also take action towards that ultimate goal.
People need to know what the score is and how to win. Think of a sports team, right? They can look on the scoreboard at any moment during the game and know if they're ahead or behind. In business, you need the same sort of metric. People just need to know how to help the organization win. And everyone needs to win as a team. At times, I've seen organizations where one department could win and another department could win, but the goals weren't integrated and the entire company could lose money, yet individual departments were celebrating their victories. It created a silo effect. Now, there's certainly room for some individual accomplishment goals, but somewhere along the road, we have to tie all those individual goals into a corporate goal so that everyone wins or fails together.
So some organizations, let's kind of segue to a different topic here. Let me refer to the topic as the board of director topic. Some organizations already have a board of directors. Some organizations think about creating a board of director. I would like to say some words, your insight, your experience, wisdom on, first of all, should I have a board of director and I don't have one? If so, what are the attributes of a great board of director? And if I have one, how do I best leverage it to mobilize the organization towards success?
Chad, those are great questions. And I think every organization should have either a board of directors or a board of advisors. And what they're actually titled depends a little bit upon the legal structure of the organization. So it's a little bit beyond our scope here. But I have seen boards have tremendous impact on company when you have executives who understand the industry, who are truly engaged with the company and are passionate about helping that business succeed. And furthermore, they need to be peers or mentors of the CEO. They need to be people who will stand up and put their views on the table and have a hard discussion with the CEO, because one of the biggest challenges that small business and even medium-sized business CEOs have is that there's no one in the organization who they consider a peer. Everyone says yes to the CEO. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, I've got news for you. The CEO isn't always right. And one of the values I can bring is, because I work with a number of clients at the same time, I can bring a very different view to the CEO, and I can have a very different level of discussion than someone who might be a full-time employee who's afraid to tell the boss he might be wrong. At the same time, I've seen boards who are apathetic and uninvolved and don't seek out third-party opinions and simply listen to the CEO, and they're just a rubber stamp. And a board like that is not worth having. What you want are business colleagues who you respect and who are not afraid to challenge you and question you, because that's what's going to make you better and stronger.
I love it. I really, really love this. You know, you get involved in so many aspects of the organization, as I said in the introduction, between marketing and finances and talent management and board of directors. Can you say a word or two about the services you provide for clients, and also maybe add some clarity when you talk about fractional CFO services? What does that look like, and how do you use those services to help your clients really achieve higher successes?
And let's start with the second part of that first. Fractional CFO services are really designed for companies that need CFO talent, but for one reason or another, don't have the need for that talent on a full-time basis. And furthermore, I'd like to add, I think every organization has a CFO today, whether they know it or not. Someone makes the highest level financial decisions. Someone is doing the job of financial planning or not doing that job. And whoever that is, that's effectively the CFO. Now, the question really isn't whether a company has a CFO or not. The question is, whoever's fulfilling that role, are they qualified to be the CFO? One of the things you said was that in my world, I look at marketing, operations, everything. I believe the CFO should take a very broad approach to working with the organization. I limit my focus to two areas: things that cost money and how people spend their time, because time costs money. And they've looked at me and said, Ken, that feels like everything. And I say, you're right. It is everything. And a good CFO should take a holistic approach and work with the rest of the management team to understand how what they're doing impacts the financial statements.
You know, I learned over the years that my most important inventory is my people. So when we look at our people, what are your ideas and insights about, number one, hiring top talent, sustaining and nurturing that talent, almost like creating dream teams inside the organization with the most important inventory you have, which is your people?
Chad, that's a great question. People are critical to any organization. And a lot of the clients I work with tend to have high-level professionals in their organization. And it is incredibly important that you create a great work atmosphere for them, give them the opportunity to learn and grow and to expand their boundaries. And I have clients who do all sorts of things. I have some who offer just marvelous incentive trips for talent when they achieve certain objectives. I have clients who create a great work atmosphere. I have clients who have everyone in the company has an ownership stake in the business. And there's no one right answer for every company, but those are the sorts of tools that can create a great work environment. You need to recognize some of those things just cost some extra money. But when your talent, when the key thing that you're selling literally walks out the door every night, you need to create an environment where they're excited to come back in the next morning and get back to work and drive the business.
Great tips, great analogy. I love it. I know over the scope of over 20 years that you've been doing this, you work with billion-dollar organization, you work with large organization, medium size, small size, even some solopreneurs and startups. The world is becoming more and more global. So my question to you, should everyone think global, even smaller organizations? And if so, if the consensus or your suggestion is going to be, yes, you need to think global, how do we do this? How do we start transitioning our thinking to become global and leverage that as a power in our company's growth?
I think it depends on your business. Lots of companies have an opportunity to think globally, but it's not necessarily the case that every business really needs to. The U.S. economy and even the local economy where some entrepreneurs live is huge, and there's tremendous opportunity right around them. One of the things that entrepreneurs should do is maximize the opportunities right around them and get their systems and processes down first before they start to extend their reach. Years ago, I was working with a startup, and they hadn't expanded globally yet, but they had expanded across the United States. But they hadn't developed their systems and processes. So what we found is that they were making the same mistakes in Ohio as they were in Texas, as they were in Florida, and it was tremendously expensive. Before you start to expand, you need to make sure that you've got your foundational elements in place first. I'm dealing with a client right now that we've just done an acquisition, and they literally had inked the deal before I got engaged with them, and it's been tremendous for the company. But at the same time, it has put a lot of stress on the systems because they really weren't in the shape they needed to be in order to grow the business. And now we're starting to go back and do that work and put some foundational systems in so that for the next acquisition, which we're already talking about, we have processes in place so it's a much smoother process.
Although there is a need to think global, I like the analogy that if I were to rephrase it, opportunities are all around us. We just have to pay better attention to all of them.
Absolutely. They say the grass is always greener on the other side. And sometimes maybe thinking globally has a little bit of an element of that in it, in that something far away seems easy as opposed to something in your own backyard. You know, I don't think there's going to be anything easy about attracting business globally if you can't learn to attract it in your own backyard first.
So let me give it just a slightly different spin, this whole globalization here and thinking about bigger companies. In your book that I referred to before, Your Cash is Flowing, one of your chapters is, don't be too much like the big guys. Why is it?
Big companies have tremendous resources. They can devote an incredible amount of time and energies and systems to expanding their business. And they can spend lots of time planning because they have the resources. They have this profit engine going for them. Entrepreneurs need to be much more nimble and much more quick and sometimes be a little bit chaotic. Now, this is a little bit contrary to the example I just cited where I have a client who's doing acquisitions and we don't have all the structural elements in place. And now we need to go back and do that. But sometimes small businesses just have to be quicker and not worry so much about putting 100% of the foundational elements in place before they do something because they don't have the resources to do it. I've seen startup companies invest huge dollars in systems and processes, but then they never got the business. So it's a balancing act. You need to make sure that you can get the business and then bring the systems and processes online as that business comes. So you need to prove out the business model first and then make the investment.
You know, Ken, I refer before to your website, homza.com, which obviously I encourage everyone to go and visit because it's loaded with just great tips, ideas, whether it's articles you've written, your newsletters, which I encourage people to subscribe to, and of course, podcasts and videos that you have there. One of the more impressive sections of the site, in addition to your intellectual property, are your clients, your client lists and testimonials and case studies. So when we're talking about case study here, can you think of one of those case studies that kind of depicts a unique situation that you're most proud of? And if you could tell us a little bit about that case study, what was it and what were the remarkable results the client has achieved by virtue of working with you?
Look, Chad, I have so many client success stories. It's really hard to pick just one. But there was a company I worked with that it had sustained $1.5 million loss in a fiscal year. And through hard work and some of the things I've talked about here, engaging the entire organization, putting goals out there, turning those goals into company goals as opposed to individual goals, the very next year, we had a $1.5 million profit. And it was just a tremendous turnaround in a very, very short period of time. In another situation, I had a client who was just in a terrible shape. We had just lost our biggest single client. We were days away from a lawsuit. And through hard work and engaging the entire team, we were able to restructure the company and get that company to an exit for the venture capital firm that owned it in about 15 months. In another scenario, I worked with a client, and this is over 10 years ago, who many in their industry had gone through Chapter 11 restructuring, and they used that same tool. And we did it in a very short period of time. And 10 years later, that company, to this very day, is still serving customers. In fact, it's been more than 10 years now.
That's remarkable. Ken, that's been great. Only a few questions left before we wrap up here. And this has been very, very helpful. I know for me, with some insight and ideas you share, and for the listeners of this podcast. So here's maybe a slightly a tougher question. If we are looking into the future, and I'm going to ask you to predict the future, what trends do you see coming down that are going to impact the business owner, the business mindset, the way organizations possibly do business? What trends are you seeing that may change the way we do business in the future?
Wow, that's a great question. And I think the number one thing that I've realized over my business career, it is the constant state of change, and that change continues to happen faster and faster. And businesses who don't embrace change, they're the ones that go by the wayside. Years ago, businesses used to think in terms of years, but now you need to think in terms of weeks and months when thinking about business actions. And I think that's the biggest thing I see. I'm not so sure we could classify it as a trend, but I think it's something that's going to just be with us forever. New technology is always around the corner. Chad, you said it in one of your newsletters very recently. Think about how we communicate now. When you and I started in business, people called each other on the phone. I can even remember writing formal letters that got mailed, or if it really needed to be there in a hurry, one would fax it. Now, if you don't answer an email, people are texting you or calling you. There are so many ways to communicate. And as you said, you need to communicate with people on very different levels. And I communicate with people on multiple levels, just as you suggest. And frankly, that was a surprise to me when I started doing it, because I resisted for a little bit.
So technology, as you said, is a critical aspect, and also doing so faster and faster, and in order to not only deliver what the client needs, but in order to also achieve results faster and increase your success.
Absolutely.
Before I hit you with my final question here, for those of you who are interested in reaching out to you, what are some of the best way for them to do so? Email, phone, what would you like to see them, or what mode of communication, as we just said, should they reach you by?
Well, the two best ways to get me are email or my cell phone, and both of those are on my website. But my email is simply ken@homza.com, and my cell is 513-225-8657.
The back cover of your book says, "Are you financially savvy entrepreneur?" So my final question to you, what key advice would you leave the listener with that will help them strengthen their financial savvy and increase their overall success?
As you mentioned, Chad, there are a number of resources on my website that listeners can go to. And one thing that we're coming out with soon is a course, as you know, called Building Your Financial Strength. But the number one thing people can do is just start to spend time with their financial statements. This is like lifting weights. You actually have to get in there and do it in order to build your strength. Too many business owners, as I said earlier, are intimidated by their financial statements. They don't spend enough time with them. They don't want to look at them. They might look at the bottom line. They might look at the top line, but they really don't engage. And the other thing I would encourage people to do is set a budget or a plan. At this time of year, people should have already be thinking about next year and their goals and how that's going to play out over the course of the year. It's incredibly powerful when business owners sit down at the end of the month and measure what they did versus their expectations, because there's a learning process. You either learn something about how you set those expectations. Maybe it was right, maybe it was wrong, but in either event, you learn about it, or you learn about how your business really behaves versus those expectations. The more you know, the better you can predict your business, and the better decision-making you can make in order to control your business.
Ken, this has been amazing. So first of all, one key takeaway for me from today's great insight to share with us, I'm going to spend much more time with my financial statements. And number two, this is obvious to me, as I said at the beginning, that brings your talent as a strategic thinker, but also great technical advice that I can take and implement in my business. So my bank situation and my bank statement looks better. So first of all, thank you so much for all this great insight. I really appreciate it. And I know the listener of this podcast will enjoy it tremendously. Thank you.
Chad, thank you. And I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed working with you over the past year and how much my web presence has grown over the past year as a result of your efforts and those of your team.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed today's edition of Your Cash is Flowing with me, Ken Holmes. For more information, visit homza.com.